that wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland, Oregon. Well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen. Here beside you now, this is The Dirtbag, a garden variety show.
That's right.
And that's Jim Gilbert. And we're once again out here at the Liberal Nook Recording Studios.
Yes, beautiful sunny day in Liberal.
Yes. And across from us is our ace engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. Ace engineer on... Well, not only audio, but video, too. Then they're still working, kind of in the final pitches or stages here of editing the documentary on Oregon land use planning.
It's a really an amazing story, and I can't wait to share more of it with you once we get further along with it. But it's a, just this year, 2023, is the 50th anniversary of the passage of Senate Bill 100. Which arguably is why we have such a beautiful state that we're living in.
Yeah.
Because it's made urban growth boundaries, so cities are cities, and the country is country, and farmers are farmers, and ranchers are ranchers, and everybody's getting along.
Now they could do something about that farm deferral thing, where I see, you know, little hobby farms, you know, they'll plant a few acres of blueberries, and okay, we can...
build our McMansion and
right.
There are issues.
Anyway, might be a few bones that we have to accept. Right? Did I see or did someone who was instrumental pass away here recently?
Bob Stacy.
Well, somebody that was more with the Oregon, with the land use planning back in the 50 years ago.
Well, that's Bob Stacy. He became a metro commissioner, and he was also head of Thousand Friends for a while.
Yeah.
But he was one of the first three attorneys that worked with Thousand Friends to basically defend our land use planning program in the courts. Back in 74, 75, he and Dick Benner joined Henry Richmond, and boy, they did a lot of work. It's amazing, really.
Well, good. All they did. Maybe nobody else has then passed away. That's not who I was thinking of.
not that I can think of.
Yeah.
I
mean, okay. Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's, 50 years, that's bound to happen.
Yeah, and you know, this morning I got an email from OPB, and this year is the 100th anniversary of the Oregon Public Broadcasting System, started out in Corvallis at Oregon Agricultural College, I guess it was called. And anyway, back in 1923. So it's a kind of interesting. And it's also the 15th anniversary of the passage of Measure 49, which I'm sure all of our listeners are totally
hip
to
that.
Well, that was the one that fixed Measure 37.
Oh, okay.
Which was...
which almost devastated.
Right. It was the catastrophe for our state. So, yeah, it's a good year. Well, we should talk about this as the year goes on.
And maybe next year might be the 25th anniversary of the dirt bag.
No.
It could be.
Wow.
Because I think I started in 99.
I think
dirt bagging.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, I'll have to
dig that in.
Yeah,
cool.
Okay, well, let's see here. Just one thing here on what's annoying me. I was debating whether I was going to go with what's annoying me or what I've been thinking about. Oh, by the way, Joey, did you try on the QuickBooks? The T's and the W's and the...
It works.
It works. It's great fun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was last month, by the way. Mm-hmm. But this month, I'm going back to what's annoying me, and I hate to be the grammar police, but I've been hearing more and more pronunciations of the word important. Mm-hmm. Joe's recognized this too. Is it leaving out that second T?
Mm-hmm.
Important. That's it. Important.
Well,
okay. Well, Joe's on board with this, and now you're going to listen, and you'll hear it, and you'll hate me. He says, "Oh yeah, Glenn's right. That annoys me too."
I'll have to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
As I think I told you a long time ago, my grammar thing is the taking out the word of after a couple, and so
similar to this.
Yeah, couple of, but when you write it. Couple trees, you can't write pear trees. We could put P-E-A-R trees, but you can't write P-A-I-A-R trees or pear sheep.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So that's enough for the grammar police.
That's right. Right. Back to plants.
That's right. And that, our plant of the month, is Cornelian cherry. Mm-hmm. We I don't know that we've ever covered this before, and now I can't remember. It was either 11 years ago or we haven't done it. So
we had almost 25 in which to do it, right?
So the Cornelian cherry.
Yeah, well, Cornelian cherry is a very interesting plant, and it has significance right now because...
I'm sorry to interrupt, Jim.
Sure.
But I do need to explain that we are recording this show live in the Liberal Nook recording studio, but it's a couple of weeks before it's... air date.
That's right.
So we're in late January now.
Yeah. And we should also mention how much we would like to hear from our listeners.
Yes.
If anybody has a question, we can't do it live on the show right now, but we'd love to answer them for you as best we can. So maybe, Glenn, you could give them the contact information.
thedirtbag@kbo.org.
Great.
The dirt bag.
So Cornelian cherry, I really didn't know a lot about that plant until 1990, and when I took my first overseas trip in my life, which happened to be the former Soviet Union, and one of the places that we went to was the city of Kyiv, which is, of course, this whole region now is sadly in the news for reasons we wish it wasn't. And we went to the National Botanic Garden, and they had a display of fruit. And among the fruits were on display were Cornelian cherry
fruit.
Like
bowls of fruit?
Well, yeah, or different kinds of things.
Not the trees, but the fruit itself.
The fruit itself, a big table full of different kinds of fruit, and some of which we could talk other times about. But Cornelian cherry was there, and I was blown away, honestly, the size of the fruit.
Describe it.
Well, it's kind of like a large cherry, but elongated. So maybe like you might think of a... kind of an avocado shape, but smaller, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But still, an inch and a half long, the larger ones. And nothing like that I had ever seen before. I mean, the ones that we knew about in the United States were just little tiny things on bushes that were totally grown for ornamental purposes. There was no fruit interest in or no fruit production of them that was any good. The fruit didn't taste good. It was just, was an ornamental plant. And here were these beautiful fruit, when they're fully ripe, they're sort of purplish red, almost translucent.
Hmm.
And they tasted good. Like you could just really enjoy eating. They're sweet, wonderful for fresh eating. And they made jam with them. They made juice with them.
Mm.
And then we became acquainted with Svetlana Klemenko, who basically had been breeding these varieties. These were ones that she created and was, of course, very proud of that. And we became good friends. And she actually visited the nursery in 1993, mm-hmm. came to America. And we've seen her several times in Kiev. And then also just recently have been corresponding by email. And she's telling us, of course, how what's going on there, how terrible things are for the people in Ukraine.
How has the botanical orchards fared?
Well, it's struggling, of course, because...
I mean, have they been spared bombing or
They haven't been bombed as far as I know, but the care for them, you know, people are working, you know, maybe a half a schedule that they normally would work, and so there's a lot of plant care that's not getting done. Also, there was apparently some pressure from... It's funny, she wrote an email recently and said that when things like wars happen, there are people who want to take advantage of the situation. You know, we only think about the people that are trying to do their best to help and to take care of things, and then there are people who are trying to do other stuff, and apparently there's a pressure right now to take out some of the fruiting part of the botanic garden and convert it to housing. And I actually wrote a letter to the head of the botanic garden, asking him to protect that fruiting part of that plant. That it's amazing the collection they have there. It's world class and a wonderful place to visit. And they do so much for the people of Ukraine because they build its fruiting plants that people can grow in their own gardens. Hmm. And many people grow Cornelian cherry all around. In 1992, I went to Kiev, and I just got there in time to go on an expedition with Svetlana, her husband, and some other folks looking for old orchards of Cornelian cherry in Ukraine. It's fascinating. We found 100-year-old orchards that were still producing fruit. And it was amazing. So the nice thing, one of the various, besides the good fruit of Cornelian cherry, it has a unique habit of blooming very early. So probably, but maybe by the time this show is on, there might be some blooms happening. They're not super striking flowers, but they're yellow flowers on a fairly decent sized shrub. It's quite an attractive shrub with its yellow flowers. And then one thing that was interesting was the pollination. It's good to have, you really want to have two different varieties for cross-pollination. And when they first were growing here, I was wondering, well, what is pollinating them? Because there's no bees flying around in February. And after a little while, I discovered these little tiny flies. And I didn't even know they existed. I don't think they came with the plant.
Seems unlikely.
You know, but there they were, and they're going around doing this pollination work on these yellow flowers that are on the plant. And it's a... it can get to be a decent size. It's really a shrub. It's not really a tree.
Mm.
We have some at the nursery that are probably 8 feet tall now.
Do they need to be pruned?
If you want good fruit production, yes. Uh-huh. But otherwise, they can grow pretty much without it. I mean, you'll still get good fruit even without pruning. But pruning will, if you wanted to do fruit production, some thinning would be good because they can get kind of dense. But really, pretty very easy plant to grow. And I've been
doing... No known pests?
Haven't seen a thing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Joe, I don't believe Jim's ever brought any Cornelian cherries in for us to sample. No.
Well, we'll
have to rectify that.
Yes, we'll have to do something about that, won't we? So that would be probably August, mid to late August, early September is when they ripen.
Okay.
So keep reminding
me. Make a mental note of that.
Yes,
there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll be back live by that time, but one never knows.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, good. And you said you needed two different varieties?
Yeah,
For cross-pollination?
Yes, and I should mention a couple of the varieties. Elegant is one of the best ones. Red Star, another one that's really good.
So it's not a male and female issue. It's a...
just cross-pollination. Just cross-pollination, right. Yep.
And we'll get to that male and female stuff when we talk about kiwi pruning here in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this would be a good time to take our first musical break. My theme kind of was, well, when will we get some sunshine? Of course, today, end of February, it's very nice. But now, and then by the time this airs, we'll hopefully be over this cold spell that we've got coming. I've seen reports for Portland of down to 23. So
that's so amazing to me.
It's still winter.
Yeah, but you know, it's so funny to think of 23 as being cold. I mean, this would be like California, you know, 23 in California would be cold. But for us, it wasn't that long ago that we were down in, I mean, one winter we were in the single digits.
Yeah. Yes, that's true as far as that goes. But for, you know, plants, that's cold. For water pipes, that's cold. For honeybees, that's cold.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's why it's.
Well, another email I got recently from a friend in Uzbekistan. They had this Arctic. I think this cold we're supposed to be experiencing is part of that polar vortex. Well, they had a finger of it reach down into Uzbekistan, and in the south, this town that I considered subtropical got to -4 wow. Fahrenheit. And my friend wrote to me and says they're afraid that that's killed all the pomegranates that were growing there.
Mm.
And it's just, that's crazy cold, I mean, for that region. So, you know, I think, you know, I'll take 23.
Yeah. Until it kills all your pomegranates. Right?
That's right. Well, my pomegranates will stand that, no problem,
right.
I'm sure.
Well, why I chose these tunes is because at some point their lyrics will say that, you know, well, the sun is going to shine or something of that nature, and you might have to listen to some of them to to figure it out, but it's not too bad. This first is from my music DJing days back at my university, and this album came out in 1979, the Granati Brothers. I looked online, and they're still active in some form. You know, they're old men like me. But this is called Nothing. Oh, I also wanted to mention that this lyrics, just great. It just starts out that, I just want you to listen for this. You call me Big Ben when you know I ain't got the time. You call me Rockefeller when you know I ain't got a dime.
So, that's good.
That's good. So yeah. Right off the bat, they'll talk about that. Yeah, Nothing from Nothing leaves it cold outside. I think that's what it was where I zeroed in on that one.
There. Got it.
But still, the lyrics were worth listening to there, too.
Yeah.
Granati Brothers. Okay. Well, next month, March show, we hope to have Tanya from the Home Orchard Education Center there at Clackamas Community College. But that's March 8th, and that may be International Women's Day. And so we may be preempted for that. But we'll have to find out on that. But when I was speaking with her recently, she said, no, we cannot get rootstock from that location. Because we'd mentioned it the previous month that maybe you could get it there. And in fact, the previous year, you could have gotten it. But they didn't sell out last year, and so they had to eat it, and so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't order any this year.
Mm-hmm. I think One Green World has it.
Yes, yes, and that's what she recommended too. One Green World, Burnt Ridge, mail order, mm-hmm. and
yeah,
but don't delay.
Yeah,
because it'll take, I don't know, a week or two probably to get it mail order.
Yeah, and you're going to get bare rootstock, and normally you would plant that and then graft it or bud it after it's growing.
Really?
Well, you can graft, if you got for an apple, for you could do bench grafting.
Oh, you're talking about bud. Did you say bud grafting?
Budding would be in the fall or August.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could bud on that if you plant. I mean, plant it now.
Yeah.
Bud it in August.
But if you collected scion wood, like Jim explained last month, then you would, once you get the rootstock, you could go ahead and graft it without it being planted.
That's right. You could.
It's a lot easier to manipulate in your hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than having it potted.
Yeah.
And then you can plant it.
Then you can plant it.
And the nice thing about grafting is that you know within a month whether it took or not.
Yep.
I mean, I like that anyway. It's mm-hmm. not like you have to wait 4 years for fruit to bear.
That's right. That's right. It definitely gives you the feedback right away. And sadly, sometimes it doesn't grow. And then, if you're going to do bench grafting, you know, you want to plant that once you've grafted the rootstock.
What do you mean by bench grafting as opposed to grafting?
Well, when you have the bare root, you have the bare root rootstock in your hand, not in the ground.
Oh,
you're on a
that's
bench.
That's just a generic term. I see. Yeah, okay.
You know, we call that bench grafting, and it could be a table or a chair or a counter, but
it's not a certain type of grafting.
No, it's just grafting a bare root plant free of soil.
Okay.
Then you want to plant it right away. So that the roots can start to grow, and you know the graft will hopefully take. And apples are pretty easy that way. Pears are pretty easy to do.
And I think maybe this would be a good time to offer a little bit of what to do when you get your rootstock. We've talked about what to do with when you take the scion wood cuttings, mm-hmm. but if you get your rootstock and you're not going to graft for a day or three, what will you do? What should you do with that rootstock?
Yeah, well, you want to keep the roots moist.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put it in a bucket of water, but moist. So it could be, you could, if you had sawdust, you could put the root part of the rootstock, you know, not the whole thing, but pile some sawdust around the roots.
And one of our dirtbag dictionary terms was healing in.
Yeah,
and so it's a very temporary healing in.
Yes,
process.
Exactly. You know, you keep it out of the sun. You don't want it to get too warm, and you don't want it to get dry. You can put it in dirt. Same thing. You just, if you have a nice garden spot, you can just heal in the rootstock in the dirt in the garden.
Doesn't have to be upright. Can be lying, laying down.
Well, an angle is okay. Uh-huh. The roots want to be in the soil, but the top part doesn't really want to be in contact with the soil.
Okay, that's good clarification there.
Yeah.
But you don't need to plant it,
no,
so to speak.
No, if you had five rootstock, say you wanted to get five or ten or something, you can just put them in as a bunch, you know, a bundle in the soil, just cover up the roots so they stay moist.
Yeah, and how long would you say before you could leave it that way before you could graft?
Well, it's still, they're going to be dormant for quite a while yet.
Yeah.
So you could probably go until the first part of March, even a month. You could leave it if you got it now. You want to get it in its permanent location, or whether that's a pot or a ground or something, before it starts to grow.
Yeah.
So that it does all of its growing in its spot and the roots are established there. And grafting in our climate, you can do, I would say, pretty successfully mid-February on.
To when? Mid-March or end of March?
Well, if it's bare roots, you're going to have to do it. You're either going to have to put, if you want to delay the grafting, if you do it in March, it's even better because the air is warmer and the healing of the graft union is faster. But if you're doing this bare root thing, then you've got this problem with the plant's going to start growing where it's healed in.
Uh-huh.
So what we do is we keep the rootstock in a cooler. Now, it's not so big. You could stick four or five of them in a refrigerator,
true,
in a plastic bag, keeping the roots moist, and hold it in the refrigerator until March, and then graft it and plant it if you want to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, some things to think about. And February is, you know, the prime time to get ready and now do it. You know, when the Home Orchard Society used to have their, what do they call that?
Fruit propagation fair. Okay,
that's it, yeah.
Sign exchange.
And that was always in March.
Yep.
It's just, we really missed that.
Yeah, I know.
Because it was such an educational thing. Yeah, and you'll have to take, when you retire, Jim, you just take up that mantle and you have people come out to the Northwoods Nursery and give lessons on how to prune. I mean, graft. Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure. Okay, Glenn. I'll
be right there with you.
Come help me, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's close enough. Let's, you ready for our garden stumper there? Okay, well, let's answer the last month's garden stumper. Jim had that one.
Yes. Remind me, Glenn.
It had to do with why do we use rootstock?
I thought it was the seed.
Or, well, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't we use seed then?
Right. So, you know, we've got a Red Delicious apple. And we want to grow more red. We want to grow one for ourselves. Why can't we just plant the Red Delicious apple seed? Right?
That was the stumper.
Yeah. And, you know, we can. But what's going to happen is that we're not going to get a Red Delicious apple from that tree.
Some people might say, good.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you've had a good Red Delicious, then they're good.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, whether it's Red Delicious or Enterprise or Wainucci Early or whatever, you're not going to get those because, unfortunately, the seed is just like people. You know, it's a process of cross-pollination. Mm-hmm. And what you get, you don't get the same thing.
Yeah, and, that's right.
So that's why we don't grow for fruiting plants from seed. I mean, people do it, you know, for fun. But if you want, you know, the chances of getting a good fruit are much less than if you graft the plant, and then you'll have a duplicate. And if you want a clone,
not even really,
you'll have the same thing growing on a different rootstock.
And sometimes when you read about the history of an apple variety, you'll see that it was a seedling found in, you know, Northern Shire, England. I don't think there is such a place, but something like that. And seedling, you know, a bird dropped the seed there after eating the whatever. And you do get something that's as good as or better or differently better than the parent.
Sure. And, you know, this is an interesting segue to talk about breeding briefly, because breeding is, you know, the kind of breeding that most people, the breeders have done for centuries, is cross-pollinating either on purpose or using open-pollinated, as we call it, like you're talking about. Let's say that you have some apple trees growing together, you harvest the fruit, the seeds from those fruits are going to probably have some characteristics of the parents that are all around there. You plant that, and then you see what you get. Mm. That's open-pollination. If you actually bag the flower of an apple tree and then bring a flower from another variety that you like, and you want to make a cross between the two, and you pollinate that flower with the other flower, keep it bagged so bees won't bring pollen from some other place. Then after the fruit is set, you can take the bag off, the fruit ripens, you harvest the fruit, you plant the seed. That's breeding. And then maybe, you know, you'll get something cool from that.
And you'll know in a month whether your tree survived or took, but this is then you'll have to wait 3 to 5 years, whatever.
And you know, when I read about, for instance, when I first started growing pawpaws, I read about the people who introduced pawpaw varieties, and you read about, well, so-and-so was walking in the woods in, mm-hmm. you know, North Carolina or someplace in Tennessee, and you know, there was like hundreds of pawpaw trees, and there was one that was big, you know, and it tasted it, and it was good. And so they named it, and that became a variety that we now offer.
Would they have taken then cuttings of that?
Yeah.
Not exactly. They didn't plant the seed.
Didn't use the seeds. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So it's a,
well,
it's,
and just to extend this, then, this is why I caution people to grow out volunteer squash for the very same reason.
Mm.
You know, you might, you know, says, well, it's a very healthy plant. You know, I found it growing in the compost or whatever, and you know, it might turn out to be, well, it usually turns out to be, you know, a zucchini that's too big or is just tough or it's not worth saving.
Yeah, the seed, growing things from seed is fun. It's there's surprises, but and sometimes pleasant. And when I do the breeding, we do the breeding work here, we've generally realized that people who do that work as professionally have to have a lot of patience.
Yeah,
and
maybe something, you know, every year coming on to keep you motivated.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
At the beginning, it would be you know, somewhat. No payoff.
Yeah, hope is what what it takes.
Yeah,
it's hope. And some plants have better. There's more fun in the process than others. Like we did this with, we planted a bunch of seedlings of pineapple guava recently from seed that we'd gotten from Brazil, which is where it's native. And we sort of thought, well, pineapple guava, I mean, you know, how could it be bad? It's so generally so good. Yeah. The ones we've had, we brought these plants from New Zealand and stuff. And so we planted out 1,000 seedlings or more, and it was painful because the fruit was so bad. You know, do I have to taste another one? You know, they bring them in and they were just, so it's, you know, and sometimes that's the way it is. It's just, you really have to go through a lot of work to find something that's worth it. But when you do, it's fun.
Right. Okay. Well, that was last.
Yeah, that's right.
Month's, Garden Stumper. And this month is, you have a somewhat of a choice here. Well, you don't have much choice, so it could be very easy here. Which of this group, the following group that I'll mention here, does not genetically belong with the others? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
White asparagus, green asparagus, or purple asparagus? So which of those genetically does not belong or fit in? If you know the answer to that, or if you have a gardening question, it's the same. It's thedirtbag@kboo.org. We did have a winner from last month. Roger wrote in with the correct answer. And he now is entitled to a free hand tool, hand gardening tool, sharpening at Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland, 4209 Northeast Alberta Street, right there on the corner of 42nd and Alberta Street. Pruners, loppers, shears, shovels, hoes. You know, I just... recently discovered something that has made my life a lot easier. I, as you all know, I sell honey, and when I label the jars individually, and I cut out labels, and then I glue them on, because I can, I change labels kind of design, and so I don't have them sent away and professionally. But I get compliments from the labels, and I cut them out with a razor and a straight edge. And it just dawned on me that, you know, they go dull pretty somewhat quickly because they're cutting paper. Mm-hmm. And for decades now, one of my favorite kitchen tools is a honing. It's not a honing. It's a knife. What do they call that thing? Well, it's not a sharpener. It's just, it's a long tube that you just...
I think that's called honing. I don't know.
Honing, it's not sharpening, but it...
Yeah.
Right. And so I tried that on the razor. You know, granted, it's just a little tiny corner out of it, like a box cutter. That's what I use. Mm-hmm. And so I just go... And Yeah, man, it makes a great difference. It just takes the burr off or whatever, you know, and gets it back so it's cutting into the clean cut there. So.
Nice. Great.
How did I get onto that, Jim?
I don't know.
Right. Okay, well, let's go ahead and take our second musical break, and then we'll get into kiwi and grape pruning. This is from the band Smash Mouth. Well, I don't really know too much about them, but I do have this album, Fushu Mong Mang. Don't know anything about this group. But anyway, Walking on the Sun, that would be kind of warm, wouldn't it? Cut down there on Smash Mouth, Walking on the Sun. Well, we will have sun, more sun, consistently, but it won't be for a couple of months.
But, you know, this is nice. I mean, I'm really, even though it's cold in the morning, I love it. By the afternoon, it's pretty nice out. You know, sun, have some sunshine.
So yeah.
I would say this is good weather for this time of year.
Maybe here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had... Yeah, just haven't had that much. Yesterday, yeah. It'll be here. But we can't wait for good weather for pruning.
No.
Now, would you recommend, even though when this show airs, we're going to be hopefully past this 23 degrees, would you wait until after we have these four or five whatever days of 20s, low 20s, before you would prune?
No.
Okay, no reason to wait.
No, only your hands.
Okay, which is why I recommend summer pruning for fruit trees, but that's another.
Yeah, but you know, if you want to be out, if you don't mind being out in the cold, prune, because with kiwis especially, you want to get it done early, because if you don't, it gets warm, the sap starts to flow. And some people say, oh, you know, that's no big deal, but I don't like seeing a plant weep, and they'll do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
but the cold, it's warm now, whatever, consider that you're going to meet these cuts. It's not going to stimulate new growth because they're still dormant.
Oh yeah. No, that's what you want to do.
Which is why you don't want to prune late in the fall, or early in the fall, because you might stimulate new growth, and then you get the cold weather and that'll nip those new growth.
Yeah, that's true.
Different ballgame now.
Wait till the plant's dormant before pruning. But once it's dormant, then prune.
It's dormant, yeah.
Yeah, and it's very dormant now. But yeah, I mean, I've been doing kiwis for quite a few years, and they're a wonderful plant. I mean, I love the fruit, of course. Just interesting little side story is that I have an old friend who lives in Coos Bay. And I met her back in the early 60s, mid-60s. And she and her partner, they have kiwis growing in Coos Bay and in their backyard. They harvested 500 pounds this year of kiwi fruit. But amazing. I thought, well, maybe Coos Bay could be the kiwi capital of Oregon. I mean, you know, like, but anyway.
Are these fuzzy kiwis? These are the ones you find mostly in the store.
Yeah.
Fuzzy.
Yeah. And very good fruit. She gave us a bag of it. We visited. But
how do you eat those fuzzy kiwis, by the way? Sorry.
Well, if of course, you wait till they get soft.
Okay.
And then if you want to eat it fast, you can just break the fruit open, kind of, and just eat out, you know, eat it. I mean, I don't like eating the skin. I don't eat the fuzz. You can break it open. You can cut it in half and eat it with a spoon.
Okay.
A couple of ways to do it.
I know you've convinced me to eat the skin on a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I'd hesitate too on the fuzzy.
Yeah, right. I mean, you could scrape off the fuzz, I suppose, but you know,
it's pretty thin skin.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's much more fun just to eat the inside than that. But so fuzzy kiwi, one of the main variety is Hayward. It's actually another one's from New Zealand, and they can bear a lot of fruit. And they can also grow very, very vigorously and cover up things. And I imagine that there's probably more than one listener who's got a kiwi plant and wonders, what the heck do I do with this thing? Because they do grow a lot. But pruning is pretty severe if you want to do it right. You can do half pruning. You can, you know, just get some stuff off of it and leave most of the rest. But if you're really going to prune it, what you end up with is kind of like a backbone with ribs. So, you've got a main, a trunk, and then the main arm that off of which shoots will grow, and you want to, if you prune it really severely, you will get a lot of fruit, but again, it does take some work to do that. But then what you want to do, like typically a kiwi will have a long shoot that grows every year, you cut that back to 8 to 12 buds. From the base.
And it'll grow 10 to 15 or more feet.
It can grow a tremendous amount.
Yeah, so you're cutting off most of that.
Probably two-thirds
of
it. And it's from those basal buds, the ones at the bottom, where the new shoots will come and the flowers will come.
From those 8 or 10 buds that you left.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah,
and that's where you'll get your large quantity of fruit. If you don't prune that off, you will get some fruit, but you won't get the same yield you will if you prune it back hard. And that's the main, you know, the main care thing with growing them. The other thing you need is a strong trellis. You need something to hold that plant up, because if it's got 100 pounds of fruit on it, plus the weight of the vine itself, 2x2s and string are not going to do it.
No. Do you prune the, we made reference to this earlier, but you would have both a male and a female plant, or one male to, I don't know, four?
Usually you could probably, in theory, you can do up to 8.
Okay.
I mean.
Do you prune the same?
Well, you don't. You don't, the male plant does not need that kind of pruning because it's just there for the flowers. So I would prune the male plant to fit your trellis. Thin it out some so it's not too dense, but then head back shoots. You know, you don't need to have shoots growing out into your driveway or anything. I mean, you know, cut it back so it's comfortable, but it'll bloom. And I should also mention that if you prune a kiwi super hard, like if you remove the entire shoot back to the main arm, then you won't get any flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So. Too severe a pruning can actually hurt you, because you would lose all your flowers then, and that's not good.
No,
for both the male and the female, you won't get any fruit.
That's like the guy who tells the maestro of the orchestra that I can make all the rehearsals, but I can't make the concert.
That's good.
You're at cross. Purposes there.
Right.
So that's a good point, or that's a good distinction, though, is you know which one in your male is.
Yep.
And you wouldn't need to prune it back as far. Does it not grow as much?
No,
they're in both, previous year, or they're both vigorous growers.
Vigorous. In our old one green world catalogs, we used to publish the photograph of the male and female flowers because some people don't remember which one is the male and which one is the female. I don't know if that's still in the One Green World catalog or not. Hopefully it's on their website, you could call and ask them if you can't find it. But the male flower, I mean, they're quite different, and the male flower is all stamens. It's the inner part of the flower is just uniform looking, where the female has the center with the pistils and easy to tell apart the two.
Yeah, if you know your terms.
Yeah. Or, yeah. Right.
Well, if you know what you're looking at.
A good vision too helps. You know.
Okay, well then, do you want to say anything about how that differs with grape pruning?
Well, you may know more about grape pruning than I do.
And it's similar, and I do like your visual there of the spine with the short rib cages, or the ribs. Right, but with grapes, you would only leave, rather than 8 or 10, you know, maybe 2. And with grapes, it's maybe a little different than kiwi, in that you can start over every year if you'd like. Often, most, I would say, grape growers will secure their main lateral stem to your trellis. Mm-hmm. And then from that, every year it grows out long. I mean, 20 to more feet. It's just incredible how much they grow. And you're going to cut that all the way back, but leave two, but not all the way back. You're going to leave 2 buds, roughly. And the rule of thumb is leave maybe 60 buds per plant. Now, I always go over that. And I always pay the price. I think it would be better if I could limit it to 60, because you'd have maybe bigger, better fruit. But I still do pretty well on that now. I've learned that no, more is not better. It's apparently that's the same way with kiwi too. And then from those 2 buds, these ribs, if you will, these shortened ribs, then that will be the new growth for this year, and that is where the fruit will form. So, but if you want to start over for 1 year, when we did a remodel of the house, there's now a house where the grapes used to be, or where the grape trellis used to be. So that year, I just cut off that old main arm that had been tied onto the trellis, just cut that off completely, and sent one of the new growths that was 15 or 20 feet the other direction. And it had the same number of, then from that became my main arm then, and that year then it grew from this. There was a lot of buds, maybe 60 buds, we'll say, and it all grew arms, and then that's where the fruit was. So then the next year, that arm was in place, and I just cut off all the new growth back to 2 buds, you know, maybe every 18 inches or something like that. Mm-hmm. And voila. And I've found that the more air circulation that one gets in grapes, the better. And sun. Mm-hmm. You just have less mold.
That's a little different than with kiwi. The actual fruit itself doesn't really need much in the way of sunshine, but uh-huh. the plant itself does.
Yeah.
But the fruit hangs underneath it. And I should also mention, I was just thinking that the hardy kiwi, we call it, or kiwi berry, or some different names, that also is a vigorous vine and has the same kind of pruning requirements as the fuzzy kiwi does.
So. And that's my favorite variety or type now.
You just eat the whole thing.
Yeah, there's no fuzz involved. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. It's very flavorful. I mean, yeah. I, when I first started growing it, I was amazed at how good it was. And compared to the regular fuzzy kiwi, I mean, it's a sweeter fruit.
Yeah, maybe that's why I like it.
Yeah, good.
With the rule of thumb with grapes is you're going to prune off about 90% of last year's growth. Hmm. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
But, let's find a sunny day and it's not too cold.
Yeah.
Be good.
Yeah, I mean, the grapes start growing later, I think, than kiwis mm-hmm. do too.
Yeah,
they come out, they stay dormant longer.
I usually prune the end of February or so,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of time that was done because I used to do demonstrations, and mm-hmm. so I'd wait until a class happened, so then I'd prune at home
sure.
to show them there too. So, all right. Well, before we wrap up with Jim mentioning some more plants that. You're traveling too. That's why we're recording early, I guess.
That is one reason.
That's right. Yeah.
Yep. We're another journey to that part to Uzbekistan where it was cold, and this is going to be interesting stories that I'll be hearing there, I'm sure.
We'll just talk a little bit about the our dirtbag dictionary term, damping off, which is can be a problem if you're when and if you're starting your seeds at home. And it can be a little discouraging here because there is, once the seedlings have damping off, there's no saving them. You just have to start over. So I've got some of this from this information here from an Extension Service website. So I'll just read part of it here. Damping off is a common and fatal disease that affects all types of plant seedlings. The disease is most prevalent when seeds are germinated in cool, wet soils. Fortunately, seedlings are susceptible to damping off for only a short period following emergence and eventually outgrow their susceptibility to the disease as they age. What does it look like? The seedlings killed by damping off initially are healthy, but shortly after emergence become infected or at or just below the soil line. The lower stems of the seedlings collapse and the seedlings fall over onto the soil surface. The seedlings subsequently die. If you've seen that, it's a sad sight. Mm-hmm. It just, and they're moldy there on the stem there. Mm-hmm. Where does damping off come from? It's caused by several soil-borne fungi. I'm not going to name these, but they readily survive and are moved around in soil or on soil-contaminated items such as pots or workbenches, which is why experts recommend spraying your pots and whatnot with a 60%, I think, or something like that, alcohol mixture, just to kill that. Jim or Joe, how many times would you guess that I've done that? Joe's right. You get a free tool sharpening. He gave me the zero sign.
Yeah.
Right. And I reuse my pots all the time. But I think the key here is that if you have warm soil, and that, you know, if you're starting your seeds in the garage, you're not going to have warm soil. But if you're starting them in the house and you have a fan or something that keeps the air circulating by them, I think that you'll be fine. In fact, I normally am. But nevertheless, I have experienced it before, and
yeah,
I don't like it. But that's what damping off is.
Good air movement, warm, you know, relatively warm air.
Mm-hmm.
Should do it.
Yeah. One of the nice things that I've had or have and would recommend is either a bona fide soil thermometer. Sometimes those are way too large though. And so what I use is the ones you'd find in a kitchen store or something, mm-hmm. just a little pocket thermometer that you can just poke into the soil and even leave it there. And different seeds have different germination temperatures that they like. The cool season crops, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, they probably 50 to 60 degrees would be good, but tomatoes and peppers, maybe 80. And so if you can somehow adjust that and know what the soil temperature is, the yeah. better for the seedlings to germinate quickly so they outgrow the possibility of damping off, and just so you know what the soil temperature is.
And, you know, another part of this, too, and I'm sure that all of our listeners are totally experienced with these things, but if you start you have a nice sunny window and you think, hey, this is going to be a great place to start mm-hmm. some seeds, and they start to grow, at the beginning they're going to be nice, but if they stay in that window environment for too long,
yeah.
they won't dampen off necessarily, but they'll become unhappy for other reasons.
They'll be weaklings.
Weaklings.
There'll be sand being kicked in their face.
That's right. Get them out where they got overhead light.
And if nothing else, if all you have is that windowsill, rotate them several times a day, brush them with your hands just briefly or lightly, put some stress on them.
Good idea, yeah.
And think about buying a overhead grow light. You know, the LED grow lights now are relatively inexpensive. You can get, you know, shorter ones probably for under $20 and probably worth it.
Yeah.
You know, buying starts at a garden store, you're probably going to be paying $3 to $5 or something for them. And you can buy a light for them.
Well, and we've talked about this, I think, in our last couple of shows, but this is the time of year. In fact, we were ordering seeds last night online, you know, from various suppliers, Nichols Nursery, Territorial Seed, those places, Baker Creek. And you get such better variety if you, rather than just buying a already produced plant in a store.
I mean, yeah.
You've got, you know, the kind of all the fun things you can get to spice up your dishes in the...
That's right. And this is, you know, this is the time when you have the benefit of time.
That's right.
It come May, it's too late to start everything. Then you're stuck with what's left at the garden store.
Yep.
So I will have to put off the part two of my raised bed building here till March so we can have a little time for Jim to talk about what you hope to find.
Sure.
When you're going,
well,
Uzbekistan, and you said Italy. You're going back to Italy,
and Italy too. Yeah,
you were there recently.
We were, and to do it twice and within a few months is pretty amazing. But we met some new friends, and we want to cultivate that relationship. And so, one of them is in Uzbekistan. So what we're going to do is we're going to fly into Tashkent. It's kind of a trip. I have some anxiety about thinking about it because we're going to fly an overnight flight from Seattle to New York, and then the next late in the morning get on another plane and go to Tashkent, 12-hour flight. So we arrive there at 10 a.m. in the morning their time, which is 10 p.m. our time. Mm. And
first day, don't plan too much.
Right. then we're going to be there for... Oh, gosh, probably about a day and a half, because the evening of the next day we're going to get on a train, and we'll take the train south to this town called Danau, which was the place I mentioned that got down to minus 20 Celsius, minus 4 Fahrenheit, which is darn cold, any place. We've never had that cold here. And I always consider this, they grow kiwis there and pomegranates and so forth. So it's what we'll find there, I'm afraid, is going to be some damage. But our main reason for going there is to, we met a man and who takes care of an experimental orchard of pomegranates. And we want to learn more about how they do it and how they grow them. And what is also very interesting about...
Well, how does that compare to our latitude or weather?
Well,
I mean, would you be able to, if they grow pomegranates there, what are your chances of growing them here?
Yeah, good question. It's much hotter there.
I mean, and much colder, apparently.
Well,
too.
this year was, this is an exceptional cold spell that they had, but it's much hotter. So they generally ripen earlier and don't have issues with growing them like we would have here, because the pomegranates do like heat. And so, but there are varieties that are more, that stand cooler weather, and we want to see just how, you know, what their crop was like, when did it ripen. You know what? You know, if there's some, you know, we might try to get some seeds someday from there.
Pardon my ignorance, but sure. Where exactly is Uzbekistan? Joe, do you know? Kinda. It's former Soviet Union.
Former Soviet Union.
Okay, well,
somebody told me that it's either the only or one of the very few countries in the world where you have to go through at least two other countries to get to the ocean.
Oh,
so
that narrows it down some.
Yeah, and it's right kind of in the middle of that Central Asian area. In the south of Uzbekistan is Afghanistan.
Okay.
To the east is Turkmenistan. Tajikistan. To the north is Kyrgyzstan. To the northeast east. To the northwest is Kazakhstan.
Yeah, I'll have to check a map.
Yeah, it's a big country and really interesting place. I mean, our friends there are great, and I thoroughly enjoy going there.
Well, we're out of time now, but we look forward to hearing about what you found.
Yeah.
See if they did, in fact, survive.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Well, whether you can do it here, too.
I'll know by our next show.
Yeah, whether that's March or April,
whatever it is.
Yep. Well, we'll let you know. We are out of time. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Glenn.
And Joe of Bergman Productions. We will we'll be back sometime, hopefully live, but we'll have another show. We will go out with Derek and the Dominoes talking about the sun shining on his guitar from Got to Get Better in a Little While. Thanks for listening. Be well.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.